cliffcentral.com.
Yeah, issues. It's Julia Michaels on cliffcentral.com on a Monday morning. What's happening, baby? You up and you're ready to take on the day? It's Monday. Gives you a chance to start fresh. Start brand new. Yes. A lot of people like that about a Monday. The fact that you can clear out everything else and get cracking on brand new things. And remember, this is a short week because Thursday's a public holiday. It's Youth Day on Thursday.
Friday.
Is it Friday or Thursday?
Friday.
Oh, so we actually have a long weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. Okay.
But you know, in this country, even if it was on Thursday, people would have taken Friday
yeah,
off.
Yeah, they would have taken the day off.
It would have been an extra long weekend instead of just a long weekend. Yeah.
I was already chatting to a friend who horribly is already thinking about how she wants to take the Friday before the Durban July off. Because she wants to go down to Durban for the weekend.
What a terrible waste of time.
Mind you, she doesn't even care about the horses.
No, she's
there
dressed
for the party.
Up.
Oh, yeah, that's all.
All right. Well, there's lots going on, and we need to talk about some of the news stories. So I thought maybe we'd start with some of that with Mubs and see what you're interested in this morning.
All right, well, let's look a little bit closer at this whole situation regarding President Donald Trump and James Comey.
Yeah.
It has been a topical story over the last few days. No signs of it calming down just yet. The focus now seems to be on whether or not there are secret audio tapes that may include sensitive conversations that were had within the White House. And if that is the case, can the White House be forced to hand the tapes over? Now, on May the 12th, just 3 days after firing the FBI director, James Comey, Trump took to Twitter, his favorite platform, and said, James Comey better hope there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking them to the press. And since then, the possible existence of these audio recordings of the conversations that have been taking place in the Oval Office have become a topic of conversation with many on Capitol Hill.
Now, I read a couple of stories over the weekend that seemed to indicate that there is not any evidence that could get Trump into trouble in these Comey hearings. And people were hoping that this would be what was necessary in order to start impeachment processes. Clearly, though, that's not what happened. Or am I missing something?
I honestly am finding it kind of difficult to keep up with all the facts versus allegations surrounding this story. So, for example, the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, he's now going to face a whole bunch of questions about the firing of the FBI director, as well as undeclared meetings with the Russians, because, you know, again, the Russians are still being brought into this conversation, even though Russia have obviously denied interfering in the U.S. election in any way. But the Attorney General is going to sit through a hearing tomorrow. And he's going to have to answer a lot of questions relating to why Comey was fired, how he was quiet, Russia being involved. It is not clear, though, whether or not his testimony is going to be in private or public.
Well, I watched Jason Bourne yesterday, and I think he would make a good CIA director.
Which one did you watch? Because aren't there also about 7,000 of those sequels in this? I mean, series.
Well, it's Matt Damon, right?
Yeah.
I think Jason Bourne
They should make Matt Damon FBI director or CIA director or both. Make him in charge of both. National Director of Intelligence.
Oh, my goodness.
Come on. Why not?
So the question around whether or not there are audio tapes has had a lot of people, Gareth, throwing back to about 4 decades ago to the Watergate scandal.
Oh, Nixon.
Yeah, people are loving the idea of comparing Trump to, you know, the whole Nixon debacle. More than 4 decades ago, the Senate voted to create a special investigative committee to look into the Watergate break-in. And Archibald Cox, who was the Watergate special prosecutor.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm being like this.
She's trying to do serious news.
I'm doing my job here.
You laugh at. You think Cox is funny, huh?
Please just give us his name one more time.
Cox.
Archibald Cox, who was the Watergate special prosecutor at the time, had subpoenaed White House tapes from Nixon. Now, Nixon had tried to use executive privilege as a way to not hand over the tapes. He refused to hand them over and then sought to fire Cox. So, you know, a lot of people also saying, Nixon, Trump, look at the parallels here.
I welcome this kind of examination because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Well, history will say otherwise. But you know what was so funny about that whole story is that the Nixon Library, this is the institution which keeps Nixon's contribution to American history and society alive. They said, please do not compare Nixon to Trump. Now, you know that you're in a hole when Richard Nixon's people don't want to be associated with you.
Yeah, I know.
This is a guy who was, he had to resign the presidency and he was pretty much told, you know, get out of here because otherwise we're going to lock you up in jail. The only reason he didn't go to jail is because Gerald Ford pardoned him. So you really must be some kind of terrible when...
Richard Nixon's people.
When the Nixon people don't want to associate with you. Imagine. Yeah, there we go.
So just on Trump, by the way, we haven't really heard much on him speaking about the recent climate change agreement ever since America decided to leave, you know, the whole Paris climate.
Yeah, they pulled out of the Paris Accord. And by the way, Paris Hilton says, no big deal, lots of men have pulled out of Paris.
Well, you know, it's better than ending up with a whole lot of spunk in you.
On that whole taking knee seriously thing, is this going down the right road?
Okay, so they pulled out of the Paris Accord. But by the way, America was responsible in the Green Energy Fund, for example. America was responsible for 100% of the contributions to the Green Energy Fund. So if they stop paying, what are these other nations who are all uppity about how America is not part of it? What are they doing?
Well, particularly France, with its new president, Emmanuel Macron. He's the youngest person to hold office in the country's history. By the way, I didn't even know this, but evidently he's also bringing this whole young sass to it as well. Yeah. Because Macron's office recently just published the Make Our Planet Green Again website.
No.
I don't believe this guy can bring young sass. His wife's 73 years old.
Hey, maybe he's evening things out. So this website is dedicated to trolling Trump for his decision to leave the Paris Climate Agreement and basically enticing any sort of disgruntled American worker to move to France.
Yeah, let's just remember, Trump doesn't care about that stuff. Now, so what are you going to troll him about? Oh, you left the Green Energy Climate Fund or you pulled out of the Paris Accord. He doesn't care.
He couldn't care less.
Yeah, do you think he's sitting up there going, oh, well, the French don't like... He already hates the French. There's nothing the French can say that's going to make him feel better about them.
Make our planet green again. .fr is the website to visit.
Is this your best weapon, the French?
Trolling people. Yeah. That's how it works.
Excellent.
Because on that note, actually, a woman in France is actually suing the country.
Suing the whole of France?
Yep, over air pollution.
Oh, so well, she has a cough?
This, I guess, is sort of working towards why they need to act fast. So this woman, last week Wednesday, sued the state and is accusing it of failing to protect her from air pollution in Paris. She's 56 years old and suffers from asthma. Uh-huh. And she has said that she nearly died during a spike in air pollution in the capital back in December of 2016. So she's suing them for 140,000 euros. Which is more than like realistic. 2 million rands.
Okay.
Good luck for China to try to get this going as well. They're in a few suits.
Yeah, have a good day.
I'm sorry if I'm getting confused here, but then couldn't you technically then sue people for the possibility of you being hit by a car every day?
Or just in the country.
Or getting food poisoning because you ate dodgy food in a restaurant?
Yep.
Hey, yeah.
And that's also like saying I want to sue the government because the rand is weak.
Yes.
I want to see if this will actually like go through.
Sure.
Yeah.
I want to sue the government because the rand is weak.
What would you sue South Africa for?
Sure. Can we sue the Proteas government?
No, I mean, if you can make frivolous cases and waste the court's time, I mean, the first thing to do the one thing we should all do is band together and do a class action against the president and the captured state ministers because they have destroyed the economy. So all of us are suffering as a result of their obvious, direct manipulation of our economy to their own advantage. You want to sue people, there's a real reason that we could sue.
Hey, but she says
her life has been... This is the woman who's coughing?
Yeah, yes, she says her life has been heavily disrupted by her medical problems, spells in hospital during peaks and pollution, and her ongoing treatment. So that's why she says that the poor air quality has increased her chance of getting cancer. So mind you, she has not been diagnosed with cancer.
Here's her. This is her coughing. Listen to this. I think she has a right to sue.
What treatment is she on if she hasn't been diagnosed with anything?
Don't you feel like...
She just said happy 420.
Caught something from that.
Did she just say happy 420?
Oh, that's why she was coughing.
That's to blame.
That's very sneaky of her. She should have just said so.
All right.
Well, she has breathing difficulties, hence why she's been going to hospital. But let's see.
Did she also have inferior genetic makeup? I mean, I can
ask your parents for that
because I'm asthmatic and I have like inferior genetics.
Do you think our number one will take you seriously if you see him? Probably not.
Our number one doesn't take anybody seriously.
No, he doesn't care about anyone. Please.
Guys, don't talk about Atul like that. You've got to refer to him as Atul Gupta. Exactly. None of these nicknames.
Yep, quite right. Good point. Thank you very much.
And he cares about other people.
Of course he does.
Oh, that's
like
it.
AJ.
Let me tell you what's going on. Here, in the world of capture, today is an important day. It seems that the SABC are going to turn the taps closed on the New Age breakfasts. This has been a long...
This is quite a story.
This has been a long-standing arrangement between the New Age and the SABC, which, by the way, are competing media brands because the New Age is linked to ANN7, which is a direct competitor with SABC. But they had this awesome arrangement.
Well, let me just give you a little bit of perspective here, right, as into what a great money spinner this thing was for the Guptas. Mm-hmm. Back in 2011, guess how many New Age breakfasts there were?
In 2011, for that whole year?
Yeah.
Seven?
Close.
One a week.
Five.
Oh, okay.
Guess how many there were in Cloudy's peak of his reign? How many New Age breakfasts a year?
Tell me.
45. They went from five a year to 45 a year. And how they worked was quite simple. SABC would host this. New Age would become part of the, I don't know what they were. They were the driver behind this.
Well, SABC would advertise it. They broadcast it live on television. I remember watching one of them last year.
And then people were like, Eskom would sponsor it. Mm-hmm. Great. That makes so much sense. And then the Guptas would pocket all the sponsorship money. The SABC got jack shit of this. Mm-hmm. So now, obviously, Claudio was just going, this is a good business. Keeps pushing it through because he's no doubt getting a cut.
Sure.
No doubt.
Of course.
But now, the SABC has less than no money, okay? So when they want to have one of these breakfasts, it's like, guys, we actually have nothing. And you don't give us anything. So someone from the SABC, you can't quote these people because they'll be gone next week, but they said, like, we literally have nothing left and we get nothing from these things. So the last one is about to happen. But wouldn't it be interesting, because these are basically current affairs to discuss these New Age breakfasts, right? How about why these aren't happening anymore be the last topic of discussion for these pricks?
That's a good thing to have on the agenda.
How funny would that be?
Well, yeah, they're doing the last one because they've now run out of cash.
Why do these not make financial sense? Okay, over to you, Peter and Dora. You kick this one off.
But do we know who any of these sponsors are?
Well, Telkom, Transnet.
Oh, so all the parastatals.
All the parastatals who themselves don't have any money.
Gosh, I thought that it was private business because I would have been like, well, that's very shady of you.
Number one at all knows how to siphon the money, huh?
It's great. Yeah, well, you know, for a while they had a good run.
45 a year, up from 5.
Sure. What a win.
You can understand if they were bringing really dynamic guests and the audience was live and enriched and empowered and things were happening and money was trickling to like different communities through outside broadcasts. But no, they weren't getting dynamic guests. They were just getting mouthpieces from the Gupta family to talk about things that they wanted to talk about.
Amongst themselves.
Amongst themselves in the most expensive echo chamber known in South Africa.
And you know, I just feel bad for Pete Andoro and Leanne Manners.
I don't.
Who constantly have to host. Why? Why do you say you don't
feel
bad?
That's like saying, like, you know these people are dodgy. You can see this all the time. Leanne Manners doesn't have like one arm and a lisp. She can get a job somewhere else. <The lisp. laughs>
Yeah, you make a good point, but it's not so easy. Yeah.
I know it's not so easy.
I think they were just told what to do, and they just did it.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people aren't brave, Ben. I mean, Peter and Dora doesn't... I wouldn't want him on my army. if I was waging war. I like him, don't get me wrong. Peter Ndora, he seems like a very friendly dude. He's always smiling. In fact, if you want to do the Peter Ndora accent, you have to be smiling.
Yes,
yeah.
Gary.
Broadly.
We're sitting here at the New Age breakfast with Atul Gupta and AJ Gupta. Good morning, gentlemen. What a pleasure to have you here. You can't do it unless you're smiling. And I feel bad for him. But I wouldn't want Peter Ndora fighting alongside me in the trenches. I think he would hightail it through the back entrance and run away. I don't think he's a warrior, is what I'm saying. And that's fine. Not everybody is a warrior. That's okay.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine, because bravery doesn't pay anybody's bills either.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. But yeah. I'm not going to feel bad for these people.
No, I don't feel bad for them. But, like, you know, I also don't hold... I don't hold much against them either, because it's like, yeah. Well, you know, that's life. You make choices.
Right.
And then you keep it moving.
Exactly. You just see, like, you don't judge prostitutes, lawyers, whatever it is you do that might be nefarious.
Those are pretty despicable things as well.
Yeah, you can't judge them. I just don't feel sorry for them.
See, I think this is when it's a bit of a downside, the mere fact that we don't have a big heckling culture in South Africa, particularly.
Heckling or free speech?
I want hecklers at those New Age breakfasts.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Wait a minute.
Like an Afrikaans wedding.
What do you call what happens in Parliament, for example, during
that's Heckle Central.
The State of the Nation address? What do you call that?
That needs to trickle down more. I want people who are dressed up in suits and great, you know, little
I want top
dresses.
Billing. I want top billing to cover the last New Age breakfast, but I want it to be really cheap because they've run out of money, so they've got to have a breakfast which is just pop. No, listen, seriously, here's the breakfast that they must do, the last New Age breakfast. Okay. It should be, as Ben said, it should be the Guptas sitting there and being interviewed about how well they've done out of the New Age breakfast, but how this is the last one.
Yeah.
Thanks all for coming. We've prepared a special breakfast for you, and the breakfast is just pop and some old sour milk. And they all sit around, and the flower arrangement is a cactus. And Peter Ndora is wearing a black plastic bag because they've run out of money for his wardrobe as well.
And there's no microphones, they're just shouting.
And then top billing have to come in and cover it for being a glamorous event. Throw all your assets at this. Come on, SABC, let's do it properly. And then if you're lucky, at the end of the breakfast, Atul takes out money. And you know how a strip club, when someone throws their money at all the strippers, Atul must do that to everyone. Say, "It's over now, bastards. We've milked you dry. There's nothing left."
I reckon Atul's got tennis elbow just from doing that at all government functions.
I reckon.
Right, minions.
And you can see the ministers scrambling for like a 10-rand note, like knocking each other out of the way, like beggars, trying to grab a piece of Atul's action.
Like drunk single girls at a wedding when the bouquet is being thrown.
That's it. That's how
captured ministers go about.
Faith Mutambi.
They trip over their heels and Musi fall
Benzi
to the ground.
And all of them just like falling to the ground exactly like that. Like these drunk loser.
You reckon that's what happens when they get summoned to to the compound?
In fact, he puts them in a cage and then he pushes money through the wire of the cage and they all grab it and like beat each other up to get the money.
Or you know, you get those money grab competitions when you sit in like this cylindrical thing and there's a fan at the bottom and money goes around.
Yes.
And they all get in there for a minute and there's like a leaderboard. And there's like a leaderboard. It goes, "Oh, well done, Faith. You got 7,000 today."
And Atul and AJ and the rest of them sit outside the cage and they laugh and they place bets.
Yeah.
I bet you Musibenzi this week is going to beat Malusi. Let's see what happens. Who gets the most money? And then they let them keep whatever they grab from the fan. They let them keep it. They may as well make it fun, right? It's not like there's any dignity left in any of these people.
Oof. Well, while we're on the topic, so, you know, with the whole Gupta leaks, with getting to see the emails, more and more information is getting uncovered. You know, last week, one of the things that were uncovered were, for example, the mere fact that the Guptas were making a bid to buy Prime Media at a stage.
They should have. I would have been happier if they could.
Oh, but these people are busy.
Yes, they did. They also made a bid to try and buy independent newspapers.
Well, guys, they've just had made all this money out of these New Age breakfasts. They could buy whatever they want. Wow.
And this way you can control the narrative. If you buy up enough independent media organizations and you make them captured.
You know, if there's one thing you can credit the Guptas for, it's that ambition, man.
They will stop.
So ambitious.
Nothing.
Well, they saw a bunch of losers. They saw a bunch of ministers who are just greedy beyond belief. They don't have many principles. And they said, well, we can buy these people over. All we have to do is give them money.
Sure.
Oh, well, another new week means another new week of revelations that we find out from these emails.
Uh-huh.
So now what we've recently found out is that there has been an appointment calendar that was synced in with the emails. And we can now tell who made a little visit to Saxonville to visit
so
the Gupta family.
So you're telling me we finally got a guest list and a schedule for the Saxonville Shebeen. All right, let's hear it.
Dating back to 2012, there happened to be a Jacob Zuma Foundation dinner held in Saxonville.
Yes.
Which also saw the likes of Sahara employees also attending. No surprise there, as Sahara is Gupta owned. Some other people who also stopped by the Saxonville Gupta compound, Romeo Kumalo.
Oh, he's captured too, is he?
Oh, man. But I kind of am being hopeful because at a point, you know, they said, you know, when they looked back a couple of years ago, he was brought in as the former ESCOM board member. Mm-hmm. But soon following his visit, Romeo actually resigned as a board member. He ended up saying that, no, he wants to focus on family businesses.
Yes.
We sort of can be able to just put together that was a lie, and that he didn't want to be part of the Gupta family.
He attended a meeting, but then he immediately distanced himself from the whole situation.
Yes.
All right. That's allowed.
Someone else who also made a little visit to the Gupta family compound, former SA Airways board member Rajesh Naithani. I hope I pronounced the surname correctly.
Oh, who cares?
Oh, well. And then who else? Of course, we aren't surprised by Duduzane Zuma stopping by there. We also had the likes of Musa Benzizwane, who stopped by Saxonville. And then we had a former staff member of the president who worked within the president's office, Delcy Sithole, who ended up even asking the Guptas to have her son actually intern for them. So, hey, a lot of shindigs happen in the Gupta household.
Were there
any strippers, though? That were, you know, recorded going in and out of the compound. Because I'm thinking, you know, you get the boys around for a big party at Saxonville Shebeen. You've
got
to dress it up
know.
With strippers, right?
We'd love
well, also the strippers
know.
Need employment.
Yeah.
Hey, and when you think of the likes, you know, Jimmy Maney also stopped by as well. You go, are you guys really just, you know, drinking afternoon tea?
Well, of course, Jimmy Maney would be there. That guy's he's got the backbone of a slug.
Yeah. Let's see what else these
basically
email
reveals.
Basically,
anyone who visited Saxonville should be put on an extremely suspicious people list, and we should all avoid doing business with them. Full stop. They can defend themselves afterwards, but for the moment, no more business.
I wonder, do you get a souvenir when you've been to Saxonville?
I think you probably get one of those little...
A wad of cash.
One of those little figurines to put on the dashboard of your car.
I wonder how many people who have been to Saxonville,
like whose bubblehead,
whose names haven't yet been released, are going, whew. Okay, still safe.
Yeah. I made it.
Nobody knows that I was also there.
Guys, it could be a bit more severe. You know, you get those gangs and you get branded. Maybe every ANC captured person is left butt cheek has got the G on it.
For Gupta.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Gedleshigis at the same time.
Gedleshigis.
And basically, the Saxonville Shebeen is a no pants party, and everyone walks around if you're not branded. And
I just got those visions.
A no pants party? Yeah.
Thanks, Ben. Thank you for that.
The Gupta.
All I'm saying is none of this can be disputed, so therefore it might be true.
The Saxonville Shebeen no pants party.
Wow.
Oh, that's good.
Like, if you want to do business in this country, you've got to drop your rods. And if you've got the G on your left cheek, then you're in.
So a bunch of old men with stomachs who are far too big for their frame walking around with shriveled privates.
Yes,
but thanks, Ben.
What a dream scenario, Mubs. Aren't you turned on?
We've got to start being honest in this country, Mubali. It's as simple as that.
Literally just got shivers down my spine.
Speaking of being honest, how honest would you like to be if your flight that was flying from Australia to China suddenly did a U-turn because there was something wrong with it?
I hate this because you might as well just, if you're already halfway, you might as well just keep going, right?
Mm.
Someone was telling me once that they were on a flight, it's a local one, so it wasn't the end of the world, but they were on a flight and then they were about to land in Joburg and they made them turn around. They had to go all the way back to Cape Town. That's 2 hours here, and then they had to go all the way back. Isn't that insane?
Well, what's insane is that this particular flight that had taken off from Sydney, Australia, headed for Shanghai, Then did a turnaround because the pilot reported problems with the engine about an hour taking off or after taking off. Passengers who had to spend the night in Sydney as a result have told the media that they smelled something burning inside the aircraft.
No.
But the cabin crew didn't really tell them what the issue was.
Wasn't someone cooking a New Age breakfast in the back, was
it? No, it was a lot worse than that. Turns out there was a whole big hole in the engine casing. But they were not told. And I suppose, you know, there's a lot of process and procedure that pilots and cabin crew go through in trying to control passengers on board so that they don't break down in hysterics. But can you imagine,
you call over the stewardess, you're like, I'm sure there's smoke coming out of that engine. Oh, no, ma'am, don't worry about that. That's fine. It always happens.
So there was no one injured, luckily, for this particular flight on the plane. They managed to turn back to Australia and then landed safely. But imagine after the landing, you then find out that, oh no, there was a big hole in the plane that we were flying on.
I guess all these things, like you say, there's so many procedures in place that you actually have to just trust them, because the thing about when you're in a bus and the exhaust starts to splutter a bit, you can go, yeah, you know what, I'll pull over down there if it gets really bad. There's no pulling over in a plane.
No.
You just die.
You're just going to...
Yes. Or you crash land and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Oh, no, for my safety, I definitely want to turn around. You think about it, you go, well, did I just waste 4 hours in my day or, you know, 16 hours or whatever the case is? I'd far rather have that.
But then as a pilot, you don't want to be too jerky, right? So you got to make a long turn so no one actually notices.
Yeah. Yes.
And you're thinking, shit, okay, easy. And then by that stage, you're already at Madagascar.
I wonder when they take a long lift.
I just like that they didn't tell anybody. I mean, don't worry, guys, everything's fine.
Yeah, no, they were just being told, please fasten your seatbelt, please stay calm.
Little bumpy, we've hit some pressure.
We're just avoiding a massive storm by turning a little bit left here, no need to worry.
Oh, that's nice. Nothing to see outside of the left-hand side of the plane. Keep your eyes on the right.
Well, then why does it smell like smoke in here?
Oh, that's just burnt Melba toast from first class. No. We don't always get it right.
See, because I remember, you know, like... I used to go to this aftercare in primary school, and there were like these suspicious guys who came into the yard, and it was probably like no more than 30 kids in the aftercare. And our little teacher made a little game of it, like, oh, guys, let's just go upstairs. And her house was upstairs, and none of us thought anything of it. We just like went up into her lounge.
What are you talking about, Sia? So, this sounds very suspicious.
Listen, not good to suspicious, but basically the aftercare was in like the granny cottage situation of her property. And there were these guys who had now made entry into her yard. And so think about it. It's that whole pilot mentality when you have people's lives in your hands. Mm-hmm. Essentially, she had 30 little kids around her.
Right.
And, you know, she could have screamed, panicked herself, which would have led to us losing our heads. But instead, she's like, listen, hey, let's actually go and watch TV. We're like, listen, we'd never get to watch TV, but cool. And she locked us all into her lounge, and she then called our parents like, yo,
because shit is about to go down. Because suspicious people were downstairs. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So they ended up like running off. But, okay. Like,
the way you framed the story, it sounded like your teacher was the dodgy one. Your teacher's
not
trying
that
to,
suspicious. Okay. But you get the mentality of it, as you might not recognize it in the moment, and it's a bit of an inconvenience. But heck, hey, anything for your safety, rather.
Well, then I understand now what you're saying.
Yeah.
And who would want to? Would you want to know? I mean, what if everybody panics and then you end up with people running up and down the aisle and screaming? And you don't need that.
It'd be like that movie Airplane.
Yeah, disaster. Let's try to be calm.
Ugh.
Probably a good idea they didn't tell anybody. If I'd known, I would have been very unhappy. And also, what are you going to do? It's not like you can get out of that situation. You're going to have to deal with it.
And you don't know any better. The best person who's most
captain.
Enlightened. Exactly.
Yeah.
Huh.
They'll know whether you're alive or dead by the end of it. All right. Scary situation. What other news is there?
Nick Gordon, the former boyfriend of the late Bobby Christina Brown, has apparently been arrested for domestic violence and false imprisonment of his unnamed girlfriend. The 28-year-old, who was previously found legally responsible for the death of Bobby Christina, was taken into custody over the weekend.
How come he isn't already in jail? I mean, I thought he was in jail for the Bobby Christina thing.
I don't know. Was there even a trial? Because I remember, you know, there were just a whole lot of allegations made against him. But was there an entire trial process that unfolded?
Well,
I mean, they say here he has been found legally responsible for the death of Bobby Christina.
Right.
Does that come with a prison sentence?
Oof.
Anyway, he was taken into custody over the weekend and has now been charged with domestic violence, battery, and false imprisonment after allegedly attacking his lover so badly the evening before that she had to go to hospital. According to sources, the unnamed woman had filed a report at the police station on the Saturday morning claiming that she'd been battered and was not allowed to leave his home.
You know what's funny? Is that he hasn't improved his behavior.
Mm-mm.
Once you're a douchebag and you beat women, you never get better.
Oh, it's actually really sad.
There's no way you could rehabilitate people like this. Mm. He's a problem from beginning to end.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll ever recover.
What do you mean? Like from being a beater?
You see, I not necessarily a beater or an abuser, whatever the case, but I think he's just screwed for life. What he's gone through in his life overall. You know, the mere fact that he grew up at the Houston household because he had problems with his own family. And, you know, remember, that's why there was that whole taboo against him and Bobby Christina being together, because they were essentially raised as siblings. So from having a screwed up family household from a young age to, you know, the death of two people, essentially, that mm-hmm. were very, very close to you. And I remember just after Bobby Christina's death, he did an interview with Dr. Phil, which was staged actually as an intervention. His mother was there asking Dr. Phil to just grab a hold of Nick and get some help supplied to him. I really think he's screwed. I don't think he can really recover from
such.
Did
he kill Whitney as well?
No, Gareth.
Oh, okay.
No.
I'm just checking.
That was an unfortunate bathroom incident that happened.
It's all right.
Nick was nowhere near the hotel room at the time.
Apologies. I was just checking. He sounds like an all-round asshole, though. Hmm?
Yeah, look, I hear you, Sia. I'm no psychologist, but, you know, all your troubles aside, what is this new girlfriend of his... Why is he making her problem his problem hers? I keep asking the same question.
But also at the
she
same
has nothing to do with your tortured past. But, you know, you think it's perfectly fine to beat her up and put her in a hospital. Okay, well, now he's been arrested, so he must deal with it.
This is where those people who say that you know, if you're that kind of person, you're an abuser, you need to be removed from society. And there may or may not be ways to rehabilitate you and to make you fit in with the rest of normal society, non-aggressive, non-violent, non-hostile society. But these are the sort of situations we end up in where people go, well, you see, once you are that kind of person, you don't get better.
Exactly.
You need to be removed, put in jail, taken away from the rest of us who don't beat each other up.
Oof, but watch, there will still be a young little thing in a few years' time, not even probably, who goes running into Nick's arms. And you ask the question, then what do you really need to know? Like, what else do you need to hit you in the face, literally in this case, to learn that someone isn't good for you? You see that, like, Chris Brown still has these hot young things.
Yeah.
Like it.
And there'll be another incident and everyone will go, oh, it's so terrible.
But that's like saying, why do you drink tequila when you're already drunk?
Yeah.
It's like people will always make decisions.
We make bad choices all the time.
And sometimes Chris Brown's actually an improvement to the other wife-beating maniac that these women are exposed to.
Did you just lisp Chris Brown?
I thought that's how his name's pronounced. No. I'm all into cultures, yeah.
Right.
They were dickmatized, as the eloquent Mabali Moloi would say.
Speaking of jail time, in Saudi Arabia, our favorite country, of course, outside of South Africa, you can now be sentenced to 15 years in prison... or £120,000 fine for what?
Tell me.
15 years in prison.
In Saudi Arabia, pretty much anything can get you locked in prison.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. But
I would say this is probably something really dumb. Like, if you're if you're a woman and you show your wrists or your ankles.
Not even, Gareth. I think that's 20 years and £300,000.
Okay.
No, you'll get this if you are seen wearing a Barcelona football shirt. Because Barcelona are sponsored by the Qatar Foundation.
Oh.
You can't have that.
Give me a
Everyone
break.
Is now so anti-Qatar that even if you're found wearing a Barcelona shirt.
Shocking.
Sorry, Qatar Airways. They had, I think there was the foundation before that, now it's Qatar Airways. So if you're seen wearing, if you love Lionel Messi like you love Allah, and you're seen with one of these shirts, well,
like you love Allah,
I'm sorry, but you're going to go to jail. Every single, you know, the region has cut ties with that emirate.
15 years.
Yeah.
A little disproportionate, maybe.
By the way, this guy you hear in the background, that's the Chief Justice. That one who was screaming like that, that's the Chief Justice of Saudi Arabia.
But do not fret, Saudi Arabian Barcelona fans. Barcelona have signed a new deal with a Japanese online retailer called Yakoten.
Yeah.
Who Saudi Arabia doesn't have a fatwa against.
Oof. I love the way that these guys are all super principled when it comes to Qatar.
So super principled. Yeah. Qatar and their links to terrorism. Alleged at that. I mean, let's be honest. Let's just say, even if they are. Oh, they still do. They still have a leg to stand on about the fact that they are so squeaky clean against not supporting terrorism.
You have no, like,
zero chill.
On the back of the Bin Laden family heritage aside, I mean, do you really have a situation where you could be so holier than thou?
The country that exports the most terrorism in the whole world is telling other countries that they're bad.
But now it goes further. This whole thing,
Jimmy Money walking into it's like Jimmy Money walking into your house party. Asking who paid for the alcohol.
But guys, it gets worse because in 2022, what's happening?
Now, Qatar is hosting the World Cup.
Yes, correct, Gareth. So what's going to happen around that? And now, actually, over the weekend, FIFA had to replace an official for a World Cup qualifier because some guy from Qatar was about to be the referee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that Gianni Infantino, he says, at no stage do we meddle with geopolitical problems.
Oh, yeah.
As he says that, okay, so we're going to change that guy out. He's not going to ref that game because he's from Qatar. Yeah. And then he's like, well, why did this happen? So he's not even in control of these things. The UAE submitted a request saying, we don't want a referee from Qatar in this match. And just like that, he was taken out. Geopolitical interference. They've all turned their backs on poor Qatar. And this World Cup, it was just, it was a mess from the start, and it's getting messier by the day. So Sepp is probably just rolling in his money like every morning and going, good time to leave.
Shame. Shame.
Well, of course FIFA would be involved in corrupt activities. They can't help themselves when they hear that corrupt activities have taken place and they weren't involved. Someone gets fired.
Shame.
What sort of street cred do you have in jail?
What, if you were with FIFA?
No.
Plenty.
When you were jailed for wearing a soccer jersey, like, hey, what were you in here for?
I mean, you're in there with murderers and rapists. What are you in
there? Well, if you're in there with a bunch of murderous Real Madrid fans, you've really got no chance.
Oh, yeah, no, then you just need to make up a story.
You know, those Saudi Real Madrid fans, they are cutthroat. Literally and figuratively.
And do they throw you in with your football jersey on? Or do they take it away and burn it?
No, I think it gets burned or basically gets ruined when they've lashed you. They lash you so many times, it's not even a football shirt anymore.
Are lashing still a thing there? Are you joking? Seriously?
All right, guys, I'd love to carry on this conversation, but it's time for us to check in with Rich Mulholland, the one and only, and it's the reality check, which on a Monday sets us straight. Good morning, Rich. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. What do you have to say to us? A good weekend?
Yeah, fantastic weekend. Very relaxed. Getting ready to hit the week now.
Good man. All right. So, obviously, there's a lot of news going on. Has the Western Cape got enough rain yet, or is it still nowhere near?
We're saying not even close to near. I mean, we've had, it keeps on teasing us with little bits of rain.
Yeah.
But nothing majorly worthwhile.
Well, Rich, I mean, there must be things on your mind. There always are on a Monday. What you said last week has been ringing in my ears. You know, there's certain things that we talk about from time to time on the show, and I think about them a little bit after we've had a conversation. And last week was exactly like that. You brought up a couple of things. You brought up the discussion around the gallows humor, which I thought was terrific. And I've tried to find places where it's applicable to what we talk about every day on the show. But I also thought it would be worth mentioning this morning before we even get cracking. And we'll have a proper discussion about this when you're around. You've got a book out, which is called Legicide.
I do indeed.
Tell us what it's about very briefly, and we'll have a proper discussion when you're around.
Awesome. It's legacy thinking holding you back. It's about having the answer to something once and thinking that means that you have the answer to the question going on forever. And it's about the idea that doing something new is not as important as stopping doing something old.
Brilliant.
Kind of like why you left the radio.
Yeah,
radio worked. when it did work, but then you realized that if you wanted to innovate, you had to say no to something in order to start saying yes to something else.
It's a great book. It's short. It's very, very well written. There's a lot of interesting stuff in it. We'll get into the details of that another time. But for this morning, what's on your mind?
Okay, so now I imagine that you guys have to have addressed this at some point, and I've missed it. But I've really got to bring it up myself to get it off my chest.
All right.
So last week I spoke a bit about Pompeii and all the people that died there. And I guess I want to start by talking about another natural disaster here from 2011, and it was the tsunami and earthquake that took place in Japan. Now, inspired by this, by the horrific disaster that happened, coders in Facebook set out to create what they refer to as the disaster message board. And they wanted to create this disaster message board to try and help spread the story that people were safe. So on the 15th of October in 2014, they actually launched this thing, a safety check. Zuckerberg himself launched it. And he basically said, hey, we want to make sure that we know when you're safe. Now, the first major deployment was on April the 25th in 2015. It was after the Nepal earthquake.
Yes.
In those earthquakes, 9,000 people died and 22,000 were injured. I think we can all safely say that if we knew people in Nepal at that time, it would have made sense for us to check to make sure they were okay, and the safety check feature would have made sense.
Right.
Now, there were three instances in which it was deployed in the last 2 weeks that at least came up in my feed. The first was London Bridge. The second was Windy Day at Cape Town. And the third was the Knysna fire.
Right.
Now, one out of those three deserved for me to have any kind of safety check. And I don't think it was London Bridge, and I certainly don't think it was Windy Day in Cape Town.
Yep.
And I think the abuse of this service is killing it. Every single time somebody checks in on Facebook to mark themselves as safe, when we know you're bloody safe, right? It is absolutely killing the functionality of the tool in the first place, which, by the way, I think is a very good tool for the right use case. So let's talk London Bridge to start off with. On average, 1,400 people die every single day in the UK. Like 15 people died in London Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
To mark yourself as safe in London on the London Bridge disaster, I mean, I had people marking themselves as safe 2 days later, just in case we hadn't heard yet. It is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard of in my entire life. There has to be a very basic use case thing. You have to turn around and say, hey, if I need to check a list to make sure that my friends are safe, if I find myself compelled to say, oh no, something happened here, let me check to make sure all my friends are safe, and I check a list to make sure they've marked themselves as safe, then it's worth saying that you can mark yourself there.
Yeah.
But if 15 people are dying, you will have heard if your friends are safe.
Sure.
Like even Facebook, they say in their terms, they say, if someone you know is not marked as safe, contact the emergency services immediately.
Right.
If I had to start contacting the emergency service for everyone who didn't mark themselves as safe in the Windy Day in Cape Town, you know, it would be a very, very, it would be a huge amount of phone calls.
Well, I did see a bunch of these and I thought, well, maybe it's people just mocking the whole situation because it was ridiculous. I mean, it was just basically a storm and a windy day. And there were people marking themselves as safe as if it had been some kind of terror attack or there'd been some real peril that their life was in. And it was patently ridiculous. But do you think people were mocking the whole situation or do you think that they were genuinely trying to be a part of something that was not life-threatening but they wanted it to seem as if they'd survived some kind of danger? Are people that bored?
While we can joke about that, maybe the Cape Town, the winds and stuff like this, but bear in mind, some people living in shanty towns and shacks and things like that certainly were affected negatively. But these wouldn't have been the people that are on you and I's Facebook feed. But what I do think it is a case of is people wanting to be guilty by association. It's people that want to drive home at the end of the day, and I guess we all want to do it. And we want to say, you know, I got past this accident today, and it was horrific, and there was limbs lying on the road, and they want to feel like they were close enough. So when somebody marks themselves as safe in London last week, what they're saying is that they were close to mortal danger but survived. It could have been them because it happened in their city and they survived. So they want to let the world know that, look how close I was to this thing.
Right.
It's the same reason we like to talk about disasters. It's a sense of, look how important and thing my day was. I could have died today. I mean, somebody will say straight up, you know, I was on that bridge just an hour earlier, just, you know, 3 hours earlier. But it's unnecessary. And if we are doing it to joke, I would guess that we need to be aware that there is actually value in the tool itself. And so it kind of becomes a case of the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah.
But there were certainly some people who did mark themselves as safe in the Cape Storm, for no good reason, just simply because they wanted to say everything's okay, their house is safe. Like, I was sitting there giving a shit about their suburban home during a windy day.
Well, I saw the first one, and I've got to be honest, it immediately elicited in me a negative reaction, because I saw it with somebody who I knew had a perfectly safe environment. In other words, they were hardly ever at risk in the first place. And when I saw this, I thought, maybe they're being sarcastic. Maybe because everybody's been hyping this storm up, they're trying to take the piss out of it. But it turned out they actually were genuinely letting people know that they had survived some kind of life-threatening situation, which had obviously not been the case. Do you think we've reached the stage in society where we, because the news is all around us and it's pervasive and it's in social media, that we almost think we're in the news? We think we are the news. We think that our lives are so interesting, or we know that they're so boring that we try to make them look interesting. Do you think it's some kind
of deep-seated
like attention-seeking?
I think this is exactly what's going on. I think what's happened is, way back when, people had boring lives like we do now, but they weren't so inundated everything that exists anywhere in the world. Like we see these People Are Awesome videos with people doing these amazing things, these acrobatics and these amazing things. And then we look at ourselves and think, my goodness, we're so shit. And we see these things happening everywhere, all around us. You know, when I grew up, we were watching Scottish television. I got the local Scottish news, and a couple of things were happening there, and there was a strike here and a this there. And then we got the very, very, very biggest news that happened everywhere. Now we get all news about any topic that's contextually relevant. So if a child is kidnapped somewhere by a sex offender in certain countries away, it'll come up on our Facebook feed for some reason because it's relevant to us, and it will create the sense of the fear. So we're looking at the world through a very, very weird lens, that everything that is big is appearing closer. And
well,
because of that, it makes our life seem more boring.
Well, I mean, next thing you're going to have people driving home from work, and after they get home, they'll mark themselves as safe.
Well, which is the equivalent of checking in every time they get onto an airplane, right?
Correct.
Letting people know that they're flying someplace.
And that's,
I mean,
that's
the
also
thing about public speakers the other day.
Yeah.
Every public speaker feels the need to tell themselves when they're speaking publicly. Could you imagine bank tellers did that? Hey, privileged to be telling for 500 customers today.
Well, this is also where, when we hear about a racial incident or some kind of expletive, I see Bill Maher used the N-word on his show Real Time, and now he's in trouble. We immediately assume, oh, this is a huge problem. It could be one person who is either motivated by horrible things or one person who makes a mistake. But suddenly we think, oh, well, this is a major international situation. Now, you know, every school in South Africa needs to be hauled over the coals because one pupil said something stupid.
Yeah, all of these things, right, are tiny sparks. If you imagine every time anyone said anything offensive, what we did is we lit a match.
Yeah.
Because that's somebody saying something offensive, even on a television show in another country, that's like lighting a match.
Yeah.
And it's a tiny little match. Uh-huh. And every single time anybody tweets anything about that match, they're throwing tinder onto the flame, making the flame bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
And what we end up with is a forest fire built out of a matchstick. And it's bizarrely that the people people are actively trying to spread the fire. They're doing their best to spread the story as far and wide as they can and to make themselves close to it, to make themselves offended by it and associated to it as they possibly can.
Of course.
And this is a mistake.
Because it makes them,
if you just waited 2 seconds, the match would burn out.
But it's because it makes them feel like they're part of the story. So what you've got to do is stop thinking about yourself for 5 seconds whenever there's a disaster or something really life-threatening going on, and actually, truly, sincerely think about the other people. Because the minute you make yourself the center of the story, you've lost the game, right?
100%. And that's exactly taking back to the check-in. When you're checking in a safe in London where just 15 people died, You're trying to make the story about you, right? It's not about you. There's 15 people that died. And that is exactly what the case is. And I think that's the truth. Is anytime we're checking in the space where we don't need to, there are certainly big valid cases, earthquakes and huge big natural disasters where thousands of people died. But in any other instance, if you're doing it, you're just making the story about you.
But Rich, I know you like solutions to these problems. So we've identified a problem here. The solution is to unfriend these people or to block them or to stop reading their feeds. I mean, what should we... There should be a punishment for them for crying wolf. There should be something that happens.
Yeah, it's not about you. Like, I think we need to be able to call people up. Like this doesn't affect you. Or stop spreading the fire or whatever. We need to try to figure out a way to start calling people out where they're feeling more shamed for mentioning things, for spreading the fire, mm-hmm. than they are for trying to put it out. Because I guess in every single situation and every single tweet you see, it could be negative or could be seen as spreading hate or divisiveness. If you turn around and say, hey, if I hit share now, am I helping to diffuse the situation or am I helping to spread the flame?
Right.
And if you ask yourself that question, just that question, it's actually very similar to the theme of the video. I've got a Get Rich Quick series of videos, and the one I'm posting tomorrow is about reframing a question. But if you can just turn around, every time you're about to hit retweet, ask yourself, am I spreading the anger or am I dousing the flame? And if you find yourself that there's no good other than spreading the anger, and people will argue to themselves and they'll say, no, I'm spreading awareness about a problem. Unless you think that we haven't heard of the problem, then don't spread it. Mm. And unless you think that by some way of you spreading the problem helps to create a solution to the problem. So people spreading that hashtag, I mean, all men are assholes or whatever it was, but whatever I said you want it was, it was never going to help. It was never going to make one male sex abuser ever come around and say, oh, you know what, you're right, let me stop. And equally, it wasn't going to make any meaningful change. It was just spreading hate and discourse. And we need to stop that.
All right, Rich.
So we need to check ourselves.
Thanks very much, man. We'll see you soon.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, guys.
Have a fantastic week.
There we go. Rich Mulholland on the line from Cape Town with the reality check for a Monday. He's right. If you're online, if you're on social media and what you're doing is not putting out the fire, and in the case of Neisner, obviously anything on social media didn't help to put out the fire, but you get the basic idea. If you're not putting out the fire, all you're doing is adding fuel to it.
Yep.
And how much good are you doing to everybody else? Zero. Stop making it all about you. Monday morning, cliffcentral.com.
cliffcentral.com.